Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with John Whitley, author of the IBM Center report, Five Methods for Measuring Unobserved Events, a case study of federal law enforcement. So, John, I want to know a little bit more about yourself. Could you tell me about your background and what prompted your interest in this research area?
I'm an economist by training, and I've worked most of my professional career in the Department of Defense and Department of Homeland Security. And so, as I alluded to earlier, I came on these issues from a very pragmatic practitioner. My job was to offer to the secretary advice and analysis on how he or she should be spending their money. And so if I didn't have these measures, then I wasn't able to really provide recommendations that were grounded in data and analysis there. So the specifics to this report then came from my experience at the Department of Homeland Security. I was a performance improvement officer there, and I also was responsible for the resource allocation process, so owning how the decision-making process by which the secretary and deputy secretary chose how to allocate their resources. Department of Homeland Security is a very large law enforcement organization, and these types of problems were just riddled through our day-to-day work. And so we were seriously hamstrung. The folks there are working incredibly hard and really trying to get at what's the right thing to do for the taxpayer. And we would run up against this brick wall of, but I just don't know. I don't see it. I just don't know. So when I had an opportunity, when I left the Department of Homeland Security and went to where I work now currently at the Institute for Defense Analyses, and I had time to take a more analytic approach to these problems, and you know, I had the pressure of the day-to-day action items lifted off my desk, I had the idea of what I'd like to do is really write down kind of how we could start approaching these problems and hopefully write it in a way. I apply it very much to law enforcement. I apply it very much to the law enforcement parts that fall in DHS. That's where my background is. But hopefully it applies to more broadly to law enforcement, to FBI and others, to the whole Department of Justice mission space, but even beyond law enforcement, to anywhere folks in government or in other settings are dealing with problems of, I know what the outcome is. I've done my logic model. I know what I'm trying to measure. The problem is I just don't see that. There's no way that the federal government can observe 100% of those cases and create administrative records that I can add together. So how do I get at trying to estimate what's going on out there?
So your report explores five methods for measuring unobserved events, but it also identifies five specific challenges that are particularly relevant to the law enforcement space. Mm-hmm. And the first challenge is institutional resistance. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I'll word this delicately. I mean, you know, our law enforcement officials out there and you know, those of you who have worked with them, you know that these are incredibly dedicated public servants. But they're generally folks who are very focused on doing their job today, this minute. What's my lead? Where could it take me? What arrest could I make? How can I get the bad guy put away? The notion that some of your resources should not be devoted to that, that some of your resources should be withheld and devoted to getting a better handle on what's going on in the environment in which you're operating in, and to measure it, to develop performance measures, and then to use these performance measures to inform investment decisions, bringing new officers on board in the future, bringing new technologies on board in the future, doing whatever it is, or rearranging from this investigative portfolio to that investigative portfolio, things that will happen next year, the year after, multi-years from now. That tends to be a little foreign to the folks. I've also spent a lot of my career in the Department of Defense. And it's interesting how the Department of Defense has worked this through time, because they wrestled with this same problem. And they have a very specific career progression where if you're an officer rising up through the ranks in the United States military, you have to do a certain number of staff tours and at headquarters levels and in strategic planning or in investment planning or in acquisition and other places where you have to start to see what some of the challenges that the secretary and deputy secretary face are. Secretary and deputy secretary are trying to say, how do I build the military of tomorrow, as well as conduct the operations today? And so I think, you know, through time, this process in the Department of Defense has created an officer corps that has a much broader appreciation for the full range of challenges a senior leader faces and why taking money out of current operations today is sometimes optimal if it's going to allow me to build a better force for tomorrow or make better planning decisions about how to operate that force tomorrow. And so the law enforcement community, I think, is less mature in that area. They haven't quite gotten to that level of sophistication where people are really being grown up through the ranks to understand the full range of challenges that face the senior leadership in trying to organize her and get those folks as effective as possible. So that's why I think you run to a little more resistance in the law enforcement community to the notion that every penny we get isn't necessarily – it's not necessarily optimal to put every penny we get into making the next apprehension as quickly as possible, that sometimes you need to take a step back and sometimes some of those resources need to go into these other areas.
Your second challenge centers around the issue of data quality, which I think transcends law enforcement or any particular area of interest. Would you tell us more about this challenge and what are some insights that you have for overcoming it?
This, to some extent, this was my attempt to be even-handed in a report. Yeah. So if I just criticize the operators. Now I need to criticize the performance management office and the analysts that sit there. If the operators are sometimes too reluctant to invest in this, sometimes the performance managers and the analysts are sometimes too eager and sometimes are not. And the tendency is going to be to downplay the challenges with the data and to not be as transparent as it need to be. So this is just a reminder to the analytic community to say we're estimating very complicated things. Our estimates are not perfect, and everybody knows our estimates are not perfect. We need to be very upfront with folks what the limitations are. If we think there's systematic bias in one way or the other, explain how that might be creeping in. If there's ways we can control for it, explain how it is you're going to try to control for it in the future. Explain what the limitations are. Explain what you're not including in the data, what you're not including in the model. All that has to be just very upfront. So what I talk about in the report is largely about communicating those things. You know, the statistical pieces of how do you measure the quality of your data, how do you measure the confidence interval around your estimates, you know, that's not as much in the report, but I mean, that's important too. And I urge folks, if they don't understand those, if they're not familiar with those techniques themselves, they need to get somebody on the staff who can do that. But what I really talk about in the report is you really need to be upfront with the leadership about what the strengths and weaknesses of the data that you're bringing forward are. Decisions are complicated to make, are hard to make. The reason the secretary and deputy secretary get paid a lot of money is because they're doing a really hard job. The data is never going to be sufficiently complete. The analysis is never going to be sufficiently comprehensive and of sufficient quality that it's the only thing that helps determine the decision. There's other factors, professional judgment of the operators, the political environment in which you're working, the broader strategic agenda of the administration, all those things are going to be part of the decision, and they all should be part of the decision. The data should be an important part, but it won't be the only part. And so the performance management office, they need to be aggressive, and they need to get the data collected, get the data, get the analysis done, and get the data in front of the decision maker. But they also need to be constrained in terms of what they're saying it can do.
So, John, the first challenge was institutional resistance. The second challenge was data quality. And now the third challenge is the cultural change that comes with quantifying a problem for the first time. Why is this a challenge? Could you explain?
We've talked a lot about immigration, and we don't know. The Department of Homeland Security doesn't know. I, as an analyst, doesn't know what the apprehension and flow rates are on the Southwest land border. But we can speculate. I mean, there have been academic studies, the techniques I talked about before the recidivism. It's probably somewhere in the 40 to 50, 55% range. That's the fraction that are apprehended. And then to get the flow rate in any given year, you can do simple math to estimate the ultimate outcome there. Some people think it should be much higher. Some people think it's much lower. It could be a shock to people to actually put that number forward. So what this challenge is talking about is you have to be – if you're a performance manager, you have to be sensitive to what people's expectations are, how the data is going to be received, what it's going to mean to folks. So if there's a group of people, if there's a group of people in the Congress, if your secretary thinks that that rate should be 100% and you're going to come forward and say it's 45%, you're going to have to think through – simply putting that on the first slide and sending that slide up and saying, here, I'm done my work. Use this now. You know, there's probably a little more to it. One thing I suggest in the paper, or I've suggested in other venues as well, is try to put that in the context. You know, well, what is the apprehension? What's the equivalent measure for violent crime in the country? 50 to 60%. A lot of assaults, a lot of rapes, a lot of burglaries go unresolved. What's the closure rate for property crime in the country, actually quite a bit lower than 45%. Maybe if you put it in that context and you say, so what we're doing on the border is kind of in between where we're at for violent crime and property crime in the country. I don't know if that's the right answer. That's for policymakers to decide. But putting it in that context may help make this more palatable the first time. These are people who have devoted their entire lives to this problem but have never measured it before. They have their own preconceived notions about what the answer is and what the answer should be. Be sensitive about that and try to put it in the context and bring in other bits of data as relevant to help explain the information.
Your fourth challenge acknowledges that performance management sits at the intersection of operators mm-hmm. and analysts. What do you mean by this statement, and why is it a challenge?
So it comes back to a point I was making earlier on the data quality. This is where decisions I'm from the analytic side of the world, so that's my background. And I like to think that my models and my estimations and my data are the best thing and should be the sole driver of decision. Operators that don't have an analytic background think that their professional experience and judgment from boots on the ground, from years and years of boots on the ground, should be the sole determinant of the decision. We can expand the pool of people and talk about what their background is and why they think their background is the most important for making this decision. So what this is trying to illustrate and emphasize to folks is the point I made a few minutes ago. Decision makers have to take all that information. They have to take the professional judgment of the boots on the ground operator. They have to take what the data and the analysis are showing. They have to take what the political environment is. They have to take what the strategic objectives are. They have to take all that into account, and they have to make a decision. The data and the analysis should be a very important driver of that decision. They will never be the sole determinant of that decision. And so the performance side needs to understand that. The operators need to understand that. Everybody needs to understand that going into the room. The analysis has to be there. The data has to be presented, and it has to be an important part of how the decision is made. But the performance manager should not go in and overplay his hand and say, you have to make the decision based on my analytic conclusions.
And so your final challenge you identify involves analyzing the relationship between, we come back to these terms, outcomes, outputs, and inputs. Mm-hmm. Would you tell us more about why this is such a challenge? And do you have any insights that you offer to overcome it?
Well, the reason I put it in here in this place is to say, look, this report has focused on measuring outcomes. That's a very important part of the problem, but it's not the only part of the problem. So to some extent, a necessary part of the problem. It's not a sufficient part of the problem. It's necessary. So the report is important because the report tells you how to go in and get at these outcome measures, and it says that you can do it, and it tries to take the opposition of, it's just too hard, off the table. But what this section of the report is trying to communicate, though, is to say, but you're not done when you've measured the outcome. So knowing the flow rate on the border, or knowing the flow rate of illegal drugs, of cocaine and marijuana and heroin across the border, knowing the counterfeiting rate, the rate at which counterfeit currency is being passed in the general circulation of currency in the country, knowing those things is necessary but not sufficient. I then need to know, okay, so what do I do about it? What are the tools I bring to bear? What are the tools that ICE brings to bear on interior immigration enforcement? What are the tools that Secret Service brings to bear on counterfeit currency? What are the tools that the IRS brings to bear on tax compliance? Then those are the outputs. The inputs are the things that produce those tools, and then what the widgets that are the outputs of those tools are the outputs. So then I have to think through, okay, then you have to be doing the analysis. So, okay, does this tool have a bigger effect than this tool? And sometimes it's very complicated and nuanced. There's 11 million. The current estimate of the number of undocumented people in the country today is 11 million. But that's made up of different types of people. A lot of those are economic migrants. They came here for employment or family reunification or whatever reason. Some of them are criminals. They're people who are smuggling drugs, smuggling people against their will. They're people who are doing other illegal activities. And some of them are terrorists who are here to lay low and to at some point move into an attack. Do I care about them all equally? Maybe not. Do my tools – visa compliance is one of ICE's tools. The 9/11 hijackers generally came in on legal visas, and then some of them violated conditions of those visas. Worksite enforcement audits, worksite enforcement raids. Okay, that gets at different populations. Smuggling investigations and things like that. So the different tools they have not only might have different effectiveness in terms of the overall number of 11 million, but they might disproportionately affect different elements of that population. And so what this is saying is you have to be studying these things and saying which ones affect which parts of the population, which ones are more effective at the parts of the population that I care the most about. And you have to be doing that analysis to ultimately inform the decision that's going to get made. So long story short, measuring the outcome is an important first step. Mm-hmm. And this report helps take the argument that that's just too hard off the table. But it's not the only thing. It's got to be combined with analysis on how do the outputs contribute to the outcomes, how do the inputs produce the outputs, what's more efficient, what are the alternatives, and which alternatives are going to get me the best bang for the taxpayer's buck.
Excellent. John Whitley, author of the recent IBM Center report, Five Methods for Measuring Unobserved Events, a Case Study in Federal Law Enforcement. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
This has been a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with John Whitley, author of the IBM Center report, Five Methods for Measuring Unobserved Events. You may order or download a free copy of this report and all Center reports at businessofgovernment.org. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.